Good morning and welcome to the August 2, 2021 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. This is probably the first meeting that we've had in-person guests at our meeting, and at the moment I believe all five commissioners are still in a virtual setting. There's none in the room. I haven't seen him on, but I'm assuming Steve Wright is there.
I am here, yes.
Okay, I haven't seen, you know, I'm looking at a very complex picture right here, but our general manager, Steve Wright, staff attorney Eric Walquist, and clerk of the board, Rebecca Newman, are all with us in the room. And I understand there are several guests in the room, and before we do anything else, maybe we could pass the microphone and have people introduce themselves before we get started.
Good morning. Thank you for having us here today. We're excited to be some of your first guests in person. Good to see some of you in person and the rest of you remotely. I'm Christy Hills, Deputy Director with Chelan Douglas Community Action Council, and we've got a couple other staff with us as well.
Good morning. My name's Louise Johnson, and I'm the Fiscal Director at Chelan Douglas Community Action.
Good morning, Alan Walker, the Executive Director for the Community Action Council.
And this is Nate Hill. I work in IT for the Chelan PUD.
Well, welcome to all of you. And we're slowly but surely working, trying to get back to some semblance of normalcy, although we don't know exactly what normal is anymore. I'm sure that we will rediscover it over the next several weeks and months. And it is due to the COVID virus that we're still meeting somewhat remotely. And while normally I would remind everyone to silence their cell phones, I will still do that. But today, if you're with us remotely, I would ask that you try to remember on mute during the meeting unless you're speaking on a subject matter. We do value the public's input at our meetings and will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input the end of our morning session, and if our meeting is goes that long, at the end of our afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. This morning, our Pledge Allegiance and Safety Minute will be brought to us by Brett Sanford. Brett?
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, good morning. My name is Brett Sanford. I'm the safety coordinator for the Customer Utilities Department, so overseeing line crews, substation crews, fiber, water, wastewater, and fleet. And just want to share with you guys this morning a learning team that we conducted back in June on one of our line crews. And basically, I'll just kind of give you a background as far as what happened. So back in June, a four-person line crew was tasked with replacing a normal open switch down on 9th Street here in Wenatchee. In order to complete the work, the line crew was required to put a hotline hold on breaker 3-103. And a check open, so a visual check open on tie switch 3-103-3. That's just confirmation that it's indeed open. After the work was complete in the field, hotline hold 3-103 was released without any issues. The crew was then tasked with changing out a service pole, and while traveling to that location of work, the crew discovered unplanned work that needed to take place on the cross arm. So in doing so, the work would require the line crew to place a hotline hold on breaker 3-104, which is basically right next to 3-103. It's at the control house. When the lineman physically conducts the actual switching itself, he inadvertently put a hotline hold on 3-103 instead of 3-104 breaker. This, unfortunately, was not discovered until after the crew completed their work and the hotline hold was removed. And just some critical steps that the team, the learning team identified through this process. Obviously our tie switch, which is the red circle above the two breakers, that was identified as, you know, it's not normal. Two of our control houses throughout the district are like that, and those are the only two unique control houses that we have throughout our facilities. When the individual turned away from the breaker, so he was actually looking through those visual holes to confirm that it was indeed open. When he went down off the ladder, turned back to actually go to the breaker, that's when he went to the wrong one. I went to 3-103 versus the one on the left-hand side, which is 3-104. Another critical factor that was identified through the process, unusual configuration of breaker and the tie switch in the control house, which we just spoke about. Unplanned activity. So there was some unplanned activity throughout this operation. They didn't expect to go back to the same control house in a different breaker. System ops at the time, they had abundance of different issues going on within their realm of management. So distractions and kind of multitasking took place as well. So that was obviously a contributing factor to this event. In the end, there was no injuries, no significant events or anything like that. That's why we wanted to conduct a learning team to bring out some positives and what we can improve inside of our systems. So if you want to go to the next slide, Rebecca. These all came from the crews, from the trades. So basically the labeling, the previous slide, you can see the labeling was quite a ways up. I mean, granted, we're not all tall individuals, but the person doing the swishing, he had a hard time seeing those numbers. So bringing those down to eye level, so it's a visual line of sight. When you're doing the work, was identified. Replacing and or updating labels at college substation to make them more visible at eye level. Again, all these items have been completed by the crews as well. Installing a sign or placard near the tie switches to indicate is for indeed for both breakers, not just one. This was identified by the crews that not only College 1, but Leavenworth 1 as well. Install laminated one-line diagrams on all houses. This could be used hand-in-hand as a tool for the trades doing the switching operations. Having that diagram in your hand, a visual confirmation, is very useful as well. Just discussions from our day-to-day meetings, share reminders of unique configurations throughout the substations at look-ahead meetings. These are the line crew look-ahead meetings that they have every Tuesday. And then discussion of live GIS systems and how it will assist in breaker designation as well. I'll go to the next slide, Rebecca. We did tie in some HPI principles to this. We had actually quite a few that actually applied. So obviously the first one, we all make errors. It's a matter of when not. The team was very accepting. And yeah, I mean, we made some mistakes. We learned from them. And if we don't make mistakes, we're never going to learn. So that was the first takeaway we had. And then principles number 4 and 5. 4, as employees, we are the solution, not the problem. That whole list I just showed you guys, that came from the guys, from the trades. So they come up with the solution themselves. We analyze the process. And then principle number 5, excellence is not the absence of failure, but the presence of processes and defenses. So we're not just focusing on the failure. What would we do wrong? We're focusing on the successes and how we can improve the overall system. So all in all, I thought it was a great learning team, great positive takeaways. Looking forward to doing more of these in the future and help improve our systems.
Thank you, Brett. Good presentation. Commissioners, any questions or comments? I guess my comment would be it's exciting to hear that we are getting the ownership of our employees to look at this in a bigger sense of just fixing the problem right here and now, but creating processes that will help us to prevent from recurrence of these issues. That's really, I find that very rewarding for the effort that our safety group has been putting in, the ownership that is developing throughout the organization. That's an exciting message that you've just sent to me personally.
This is Ann. I have a comment.
You bet.
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, no, I just want to say thank you. Appreciate the report. I've really learned a lot from this approach that we've taken of always doing lessons learned. It's terrific. I agree with what Randy says, and it's something that I've kind of introduced to a couple other boards that I sit on, and they found it really helpful. And appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Great to hear. Thanks.
So thank you, Brett.
No problem. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. And at this moment in time, any items on the consent agenda could be transferred to the regular agenda at the request of any commissioner. Doesn't look like there's anything that needs to be transferred. Any changes to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 3, CPO winner recognition, and Steve.
Okay, we want to recognize Nate Hill. Nate, come on up if you would, please. So I want to give a little bit of background on this for just a moment. You can come right up here. A couple of years ago, we made a decision to move to a more automated system for managing contracts. And we've had, it's done some really good things for us. One of our challenges was that it didn't match up well with accounts payable. And that's an important part of connection for contract procurements. So we've been trying to figure out how to solve that problem for a while. And I won't go through all the details. Maybe Nate will. Maybe Nate can tell us a little bit about it. But I will tell you that what we needed was somebody to step up and fix the problem. It was just creating some consternation in the organization, and we needed to find a way to be able to make sure that we could just get the work done and do it in an efficient way. And Nate is a recognized star within our IT group, and what he did in this case was definitely displayed what we're looking at in terms of taking personal accountability to go figure out how to solve the problem, and got it solved. So, Nate, congratulations. We welcome you here in front of the board, and we'd love to give you a couple minutes to share your thoughts with the board.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and thank you to Finance for their nomination. And quickly, thanks for the introduction. That's everything there is correct, and where the story actually starts, it goes back to almost 11 years ago when I started working here. One of my first tasks was to take a look at this bid workflow system, which is something that the district uses to coordinate the contracting, putting things out for bid, tracking vendor payments, tracking all kinds of information. And it was a great little homegrown system that did a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And so, but when it comes time to replace those applications, it gets really hard because it does a lot of things for a lot of different people. And in some ways, people didn't actually knew what it did for all the different groups across PCS or finance or even engineering and project management. And so one of my first tasks I did a long time ago when I first got here was just writing down the requirements of what does the system actually do for all these different people, learning the business processes, learning what people actually use it for. And so at that time, we didn't take action at that point, but we had all that stuff documented and went through a good process for that. And every couple years, somebody would suggest something and we'd take a look at it. And sometimes it was too big or too small, wasn't quite right, but eventually the decision was to go with the ACT system, and we just couldn't quite get there with the AP side of it, but because we had, the preparation and the requirements and the documentation, when the opportunity presented itself, we were able to jump right in there and build out a solution using our PeopleSoft platform and get that working up and running within a few months, and I think save AP a lot of time and double entry and things like that. So it worked out really well, just having gone through the process and we're able to deliver value, I think. So thank you.
Randy, you're on mute, I'm afraid.
There we go. Thank you, Nate. I don't know if there's anybody on in this meeting that underestimates the value of technology working well. And to show the dedication and to make it work better and work for us, I bow down with a lot of respect to what you've done. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Commissioners? Well, thanks again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for joining us today.
Yep, and
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Item number 4, Chelan Douglas Community Action Council update.
Yeah, I'm going to invite Alan and his team to join us at the board table here. You can come on up front. There should be seats here for you. For the board's benefit and for the public's benefit, just say we have a strong partnership with the Community Action Council on a variety of different fronts, low-income weatherization and support for those who are having difficulty paying their bills. I ran into Alan about a month or so ago. We were talking some about this, and he suggested that it would be a good idea to do an update for the board about the activities that are going on, and that made sense to me that because we do have this strong partnership. So, Alan, we're just going to turn this over to you, and we welcome you here today.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, commissioners and staff, for inviting us in here today. I must say I know a gentleman in Ellensburg that works at Central Washington University in the IT department, and his name is Nate Hill. So I'm just assuming everybody in IT is Nate Hill now. So we'll just go with that. So thank you. We did introductions earlier. Sitting immediately to my right is Christy Hills, deputy director for the organization, and next to Christy is Louise Johnson, our fiscal director. So thank you again. Vern Gernard sends his apologies. He had a medical issue come up this morning, and our new weatherization and energy assistance program director is not able to be here today. So we sent a deck of slides. Go ahead, Rebecca, and you can proceed to the next one. I'll give you just a short overview. The people we assist live throughout this region, and all of our services are available at no cost to low-income individuals and families, and about 40% of our customers are people of color. Then next slide. Unfortunately, while a very important program, we no longer have funding for the opioid education outreach program. This was a program that targeted middle and high school students and providing education to them. And unfortunately, the funding for that program ran out just here in the last 30 days, but was an excellent program that we had for a short term. Next slide, the community support. While these are two of our current community support focused programs, we also encourage our program directors and staff to be involved in community-based service clubs and organizations, and we have several staff members involved in a variety of different community groups that meet on a weekly or monthly basis. The next slide is our food security. In the past year, one of our more recognizable programs in 2019, as an illustrate the difference, we distributed approximately 2 million pounds of food. In 2020, that increased to about 3.5 million pounds with the huge assistance of roughly 15 National Guard members supporting our organization the last 15 months. They just ended their service with us in the last couple weeks. Housing program. We also have a Treasury Rent Assistance Program. You may have heard of that, referred to as TRAP. Is one that we're currently managing through the Department of Commerce. This grant is approximately $8 million and includes the ability to assist with utilities as well. So we can do any heat source, electric or other heat source, as well as sewer, garbage, and internet connection also. This grant ends September of 2022, although we are anticipating a second round of this funding that are referred to as TRAP 2.0 to be released later this fall, probably close to $12 million for our two-county area here. And this will provide assistance through September of 2025. Today, of course, we want to take a closer look at weatherization. And if you're a fan of peanuts like I am, you got to insulate the old attic, as Snoopy says there. So launched in October 2nd, 1950, Mr. Charles Schultz. So PUD and our partnership, we do about 15 weatherization projects per year, if we conservatively estimate that, in Chelan County. If we do that over 36 years, that's approximately 600 homes that we have weatherized and done home energy upgrades to. We had the Light Touch program. It was a pilot program we developed with the PUD last fall to provide simple energy improvement measures. We're providing LED light bulbs, smoke detectors, low-flow shower heads, blankets, and most importantly, customer education. We had two AmeriCorps members providing that service. It was a cost of about $18,000. We split that cost with the PUD. The two AmeriCorps members started in November, and then unfortunately we were hit with this thing called COVID, and we were no longer able to go into homes. But in that four-month period, they visited 115 households. Helping Hands, another very important program, and supported by the PUD, and we certainly appreciate the additional funding to that program by the commissioners last year, the additional $40,000. And I suspect as we move forward and the shutoff moratorium is lifted, we will probably see an increased use of those funds as well. The next slide is the weatherization. Since the program began at the national level in 1976, we have been involved in it here with Community Action, and it has helped improve the lives nationwide of more than 7 million families. Weatherization is the practice of protecting a building and its interior from the elements, particularly from sunlight, precipitation, and wind, and of modifying a building to reduce energy consumption and optimize energy efficiency. This program really enables low-income families to reduce their energy bills and making their homes more energy efficient. Some of the weatherization home upgrades you can see on the slide there. These are the most common type of upgrades, and typically our technicians conduct 10 or 12 different upgrades to the home to reduce energy consumption. We strive to complete as many upgrades as possible, knowing that our federal and state funding sources do not allow us to return to a home for a period of 10 years to do additional work. So we take the time to do as many upgrades and improvements as we possibly can. Our funding sources, as you can see, we have a multitude of various funding sources help us help our customers to reduce their energy burden and improve their health and their home's health, and of course include reduce and improve energy conservation. The next few slides will illustrate the funding sources as well as the Chelan PUD's support of the customers with home energy upgrades. And these are just customers in Chelan County. This is not our funding for Chelan County only. This is the snapshot for 2021. Not an exact dollar amount here. We try to get as close as possible looking at the number of homes that we do in entirety and the funding that goes into it. But our software program doesn't allow us to do exact figures, but this is a fairly close snapshot, and you can see we've been in 25 homes so far this year. The next slide, last year was a challenge, but we're on track to upgrade double the number of homes in 2021. We've added two more weatherization technicians to our crew. We had a crew of two. We now have a crew of four, with the newest one starting this morning. And he was actually one of our National Guard members that was looking for a job, and we hired him on full-time with us. So we're excited to have him joining us today. Right now, one of our challenges on completing projects is just the timely delivery of materials, and I'm sure you folks understand that challenge as well. The next slide is just the 2019 home energy upgrades, and you can see consistently the $90,000 that the PUD provides to us and then our other funding sources, and 32 homes total in 2019. And then just for perspective, 2018 as well, fewer homes. 2018 was the first year we started utilizing the low-income home assistance program, and I'll talk about that here just briefly as well. So this is the total number of weatherization completed projects in the calendar year. CC is for Chelan County and DC for Douglas County. As you can see there, through these are the weatherization projects, 12 that we've done so far this year in 2021 in Chelan County through June. On average, as I mentioned before, each home receives about 10 or 12 energy efficiency measures. The next slide illustrates our LIHEAP OES projects, and the number of low-income home energy assistance program, LIHEAP as it referred to, and the other emergency services, OES. This includes furnace repair and replacement, replacing windows and exterior doors, roofing repairs, and reducing energy consumption and improving the health and safety of our customers. So while you may have known the drill, the weatherization program, you may not have known the hammer and saw, LIHEAP and OES. A little humor there. We try. So the OES projects are on the next slide. This includes both weatherization and the hammer and saw programs, if you will, the OES projects. As you can see, for Chelan County through the year 25. The national weatherization statistics, for every dollar invested in weatherization, $1.72 is generated energy benefits and $2.78 in non-energy benefits. Examples of non-energy benefits include a more livable home, improved health resulting in fewer missed days of work and school, and a decrease in doctor visits and medical expenses. With energy assistance, another program that in close partnership with the PUD, provides a one-time per heating season assistance in paying the heat bill for eligible households. The benefits of this program include we will pay for any heat fuel type. The PUD dollars, of course, are designated for electricity, but with other funding, we can also do oil, natural gas, wood, and propane. The program provides a grant of up to $1,000 per household per year, and this is applied to the customer's account, not given directly to the customer, but applied to their account, for example, their account here at the PUD. Funding sources are there as well. Our LIHEAP is our largest funding source for energy assistance. The grant for this coming biennium, 2021-2023, is approximately $770,000 for the 2 years. It's almost a third more than our previous two-year cycle of 2019-2021. We also expect to receive an amendment to this contract later this year, which will include additional funds as part of the American Rescue and Plan Act, ARPA, as it may, you may know that program by. The Helping Hands program, an important part of our assistance to customers as well. You can see the numbers there. Through our LIHEAP, our Energy Assistance Program, and the PUD Helping Hands program, we provided assistance to a total of 1,029 households in 2020. Of that total, 802 were Chelan County residents. These next few slides illustrate the two main energy assistance funding sources for Chelan County residents. Remember that this is the LIHEAP portion is just the utility assistance that we provide, and then there's other funding that goes into that as well. The past couple of months, we've also used some of the TRAP funding that we have available to provide water assistance and other utility assistance for individuals. And then we also have a water assistance program with the City of Wenatchee, and we're anticipating later this fall to receive a new water assistance program with our LIHEAP contract through the federal government. Next slide is the 2020 Chelan County funding for utility assistance, and 2019 and 2018. And you can see consistently Helping Hands is roughly that 8 to 10% of the total picture, but nonetheless a very important part of that total picture. Last is our service to help our seniors and disabled customers apply for the Chelan PUD rate discount. PUD staff will frequently refer customers to us to determine eligibility and completion of the application. It's a fairly quick and easy process and doesn't take us a whole lot of time, but it is something that the PUD currently doesn't provide support for. We're not here asking you today to provide a support for this. Just wants you to know that it's part of a community service that we offer as well. So our hope today is this information will provide you with a better understanding of our complete scope of work to reduce the low-income energy burden, available energy assistance programs, and the equitable distribution of those energy benefits. Our partnership in addressing the needs of our low-income customers, reducing energy burden, increasing conservation, and improving the lives and extending the life of homes. We thank you for your time. Look forward to exploring ways that we can better serve our customers in Chelan County. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Good. Did I get in under 10 minutes, Rebecca?
Well done, Alan.
Darn close. Just for my fellow commissioners, Gary Arsenal must not have fiber at his house because he's now on a telephone line. Are you there, Gary?
I'm here, Randy.
Okay, very good. It's glad that you, that must be your landline also.
Yes, we're actually experiencing router gremlins and, the best and most accurate way to attend the meeting today will be by cell phone. Hopefully, I'll get those router gremlins repaired quickly.
Okay, very good. So thank you again, Alan, for that presentation. You know, this past year has been, we've been made as a commission much more aware of the resources that are utilized in our community and those that are needed in our community with COVID. So your presentation really was very timely. And any questions of my fellow commissioners for Alan?
Mr. President, this is Gary. If I may have a few words.
You bet.
I just love to congratulate Alan and the entire organization for the good work that they do, particularly at this moment in time. We've been dealing with COVID and a pandemic, and I'm certain that your task has been complicated by the pandemic, but the number of families and lives that you've been able to help and impact in a positive way will never be forgotten. So I just want to make sure that I extend my heartfelt thank you, Alan, and to you and your entire organization.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's greatly appreciated, and we will share that back with our staff as well.
Commissioners, if I could, I just have a couple of quick questions for Alan. Is that okay, Commissioner Smith?
Yes.
Alan, really good presentation, and thank you for that. It looks like from your numbers that you're headed towards a big increase in low-income weatherization this year, and that had been a goal for our board, was to try to make that happen.
Yes.
Just say a bit more about how that's going and how we're doing, and it looks like you may be doubling the numbers from past years. Is that correct?
That's our hope. We did have a transition in some staff earlier this year, but we have a new weatherization program manager, Vern Grenard, that I mentioned earlier. Vern is familiar with the trade industry. He had his own construction business for a number of years in Oklahoma. He's a local boy. If you know any of the Grenard family, odds are you might know Vern as well. And he has really approached this as, how do we increase the number of homes that we're able to get into? We also have to look at that from a funding source, and so we've been able to illustrate to funding organizations, the state and federal level, that we are aggressively pursuing homes to increase here in Chelan County, with the addition of two new energy weatherization technicians. That will double our crew from a crew of two to a crew of four. And we also just recently had our two existing members achieve some additional certification that allows them to do some of the audit work as well in the home. So there for a while, we're having to subcontract that work out. Now we can do that work internally as well, which just allows us to proceed quicker as well. One of the things that I would be curious to know is, we subcontract out some of our electrical and plumbing and HVAC work. And as we look at exploring different ways of our partnership, I don't know if there are staff members within the PUD that might have those expertise, if you do any of that type of work internally on any of your own work, if there might be a way for us to subcontract with your internal staff on some of that. So right now we have it's a challenge paying prevailing wage and getting subcontractors to go through that process with Department of Labor and Industry, so we have limited number of folks that we contract with.
Well, we'll leave that. I'm pretty sure Andrew Grissell is on the phone, and so I think we'll leave that one for him to respond to you on, and then think through whether there's any way we could work together on that, either that or some other way that we could work together.
I am on the phone. Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
All right. So, Andrew, you'll follow up with Alan on that one.
I will follow up with him. Just wanted to let you know that I was here. We heard that, and we'll follow up and see if there's some way we can better coordinate or cooperate on that.
Perfect, Andrew. Thank you.
And the other one is just, this board has regularly, on a monthly basis, checked in on how we're doing on arrearages. We fortunately are in way better shape than our colleagues across the utility industry, even here in Washington State. But we do also have the highest arrearages that we've had in many years. And I know you're working on that. We're working on that. Just your thoughts, how's the federal money? Is it showing up? And are we able to take advantage of it? And are there any opportunities that we have to try to, because we probably are, most likely, given what the governor has said, headed toward the end of the disconnect moratorium by the end of September. Yeah. Anything more that we can be doing now to make that transition easier for folks?
Sure. I think we've made changes internally in our processes as well, allowing individuals to complete all the work remotely. They do not need to come into our office, and so we have it set up where they can complete energy assistance applications remotely. And so we're trying to get that word out and be sure that people understand that is available. We've historically have done a fair amount of outreach efforts as well throughout the two-county area. Some of that has been drawn back, just as a lot of our outreach efforts, in-person outreach efforts, have been. We continue to do a fair amount of marketing, especially for rental assistance, and I mentioned we have utility assistance as part of that as well. And our staff are really cohesive about being sure that if one program that may have utility assistance isn't able to provide that level of support, that we get them down the hall and get them in front of somebody that can. So we do a lot of self-referral inside our office, but I think just any messaging that the PUD can help in that through your own outlets is greatly appreciated and supported. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is getting the word out to people who've never accessed services from us before. There are people who have received it in the past who know where to find us now, but people who have arrearages right now may not have ever had to seek services. So however you can get the word out to those folks, we're happy to provide flyers for mailings, coordinate together on social media, whatever seems to be effective for outreach to your customers, our mutual customers, really we're happy to coordinate with.
Great, thanks. We do anticipate when that moratorium ends, that come September or October, that we're going to have some challenging times there. So appreciate working with you on that, and we'll follow up with you. That's what I had. Thank you, Commissioner Smith.
Thanks again, Alan. We appreciate the presentation.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on our agenda to item 5, the quarterly board balance scorecard update from the commissioners. My fellow commissioners will recall we generally speak to only those items that are in the red or unfinished. And Commissioner Congdon, I know you're on the phone. The first one is yours on the Mid-Sea managers meetings, but the commissioners meetings. COVID has canceled those. And I'm looking down. Any comment, Ann?
No, thank you, Randy. No, you made the comment. That's all we need to say. This will change in the next year.
Yes. And now my fellow commissioners, we're moving down. You're all seeing it on the screen. I don't know if Gary and Ann are seeing it on the screen. But the next one is approving the strategy and business planning. That's mine, and there's a couple of them that are white, but it's just because we haven't got to the end of the year yet, because we will adopt a budget and we will complete our review of our balance scorecard. And then down to G2, Commissioner McKenna. There's one in the white. Are you on mute, Steve?
I think it's possible he pushed the wrong button.
I think he might have.
Oh, wait, he's back.
I'm back.
I always push that button. You know, those long pauses usually mean something.
I have nothing to add, Randy. Everything that we are, we can attend and we are working on, we're in compliance. And so that's, we'll have the conference scheduled September 8th through 9th, and so I think we're in good shape.
Okay. And moving on, again, once again, this is my reporting. This is the audit committee that will occur in December, the new audit committee members. So that's in white, and then Commissioner Bowles, continuously improving board member skills.
Yeah, those will both take place in our fall workshop. So it's just a matter of timing.
Okay. Is that all of it, Rebecca?
It is.
Wow, that was fast.
The rest is just the attendance information.
And by the way, every time we have these presented to us, I wish to thank Rebecca for the tracking that she's doing on all of our attendances. When I'm assuming this all becomes part of the record for the minutes, and it shows, even with COVID, how many meetings we still have been attending remotely, some in person, but primarily remotely with Teams and Zoom. And it's still busy in the utility business. That's all I can say. With that, I'll go to item six and turn it over to Steve Wright and the managing directors for the quarterly report on the district performance.
Okay, I think the board is familiar, but just for the public benefit, say we do report quarterly on our performance plan. We report on an exception basis, so things that have changed since the last quarter. We'll be going through these item by item on the exceptions, and the lead managing director will be reporting for that item. We will start with Bob Shane.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I'll start off with objective number one. Item one, fiber expansion premises passed. We're a little behind right now. Our target for this quarter would have been 360 for a total of 599. We're off by 73. Not particularly concerned. We're with this transition from fiber and customer utility that occurred last year. We're still getting our wheels oiled so that we're better organized and integrated in how we do this. But I have no concerns about meeting our overall target by Q4 of this year of 936.
I have the next two. So we did complete the annual report to strategy partners in April. That was a public meeting that we held. And we also have completed the five-year priorities and metrics for the 2020 to 2026 business plan, which the board will see in the fall after we translate that into draft budgets.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. I've got the next three items. The first two are related to the Public Power Benefit Program. As you're aware, we did identify projects for the remaining portion of 2021 funds. We discussed that with the board on June 1st, so that's been completed. The program outreach and solicitation effort has been delayed, and that was also in consultation with the board, knowing that we've been impacted by our ability to do outreach because of the pandemic. So we are queued up to begin that outreach after Labor Day. We have the information on our website, the application form on our website, and we are ready to go. We'll just be taking a real concerted effort on that here in the next few weeks. And then the third item that I had is also related to public power benefit and some of the efforts associated with our day use park passes. Another year, we had a very strong response to our request for park passes. So we exceeded the goal of 2,500 passes. So that is now marked complete. I'll have those final numbers for you in the fall when we do our next parks update to you.
Hello, this is Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources. Go through a few items here. For our low-income program, we've completed our outreach to the community organization, that section has been completed, and we'll see it in that program in our budget. The behavioral programs required a change in contractors, which has put the timeline at risk, but at this point, we still should be able to finish it by the end of the fiscal year.
Morning, Commissioners. This is Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I've got the next few here. We had a goal to return C7 at Rocky Reach to service by the second quarter, and that came in by June 8th, so That one was completed. Next one down, we had a goal to complete the water-filled hub design for units C10 and 11, again by the second quarter, or actually by May 1, and that was completed on time, right on May 1. Next one down, this hasn't changed color since last time, but I wanted to make sure the board was aware. This is associated with B10 down at Rock Island. This was returned to service after the deadline. We had a 331 target. We returned it on April 13th, and we continue to see some vibration concerns that we're going back and forth with Andritz on to try and determine what the source of that is. There's another one, next one similar. This was red last time as well. This is B5 associated with Rock Island. We had a return to service date of February 5th. Or actually, that's the revised return to service date. We had a target of second quarter this year. That unit continues to see challenges and issues. We're now seeing measurements differing in the field than what we're taking in the Andritz shop, and so we're working with them to figure out what the discrepancy is there.
Commissioners, I have the next two, which are related to legislative efforts. First one is secure wildfire legislation that addresses dangerous tree removal. We feel really good about the successes that we had this year with the Forest Health and Wildfire Prevention Act, along with the permanent decision related to the Electric Utility Wildfire Advisory Committee. So I feel like we're in a good place on the state level. We continue to monitor things at the national level as well, particularly the National Prescribed Fire Act, which is some bipartisan legislation, which was recently introduced. And then we also secured funding for the Dryden Wastewater Project, so another success there.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I have the next two. The first one is in regard to test metrics for tracking and communicating progress of fiber expansion, as Bob has described earlier. This is primarily looking at the two large projects we have going on, both Chumstick and the Manson area, identifying where we are in the scope of the project and how we're moving forward. Another metric we put in place has to do with just tracking the service interval. Basically, how long it takes from when a customer places an order to when that fiber is actually lit at the side of the house. So good progress there. So we've completed that. The next one down is looking ahead to next year in the expansion areas and infill where fiber has provided their initial plan for business planning for 22.
Commissioners, I have the next four items. The first one is under Subsection 13, execute relicensing plan for Rock Island project. You'll see that there's lots of green there under that item. The one item that's red is finalized project economics model. We just need a few extra weeks to finish our work on that. That is expected to be completed here in the next couple of weeks. Under implement lawn range facilities plan, Rock Island facility construction completion. That project, of course, is nearly complete, and we held a dedication and an open house event. However, as you may have noticed, if you were able to join us and were out there on site, there's still some equipment that's being installed and a few punch list items, which is why that is red. Next, facilitate the productive reuse of the Fifth Street campus. The interlocal agreement between the port and the district is on your agenda today, so hope to be able to turn that green on the next report. And then a subcomponent of that effort is evaluating proposals and complete negotiations with hopefully a developer that wants to tackle this project. And so we've got a 12-1 goal on that item. Knowing that it will take some time to market the property and do negotiations, that is marked yellow because it seems like 12-1 is an optimistic time frame, but you never know what will happen. So got lots of faith in the port and know that this is a great site for redevelopment. So we may yet hit that time frame, but that may also stretch into 2022.
Commissioners, this is John again. I have the next several. The first one is noting that we completed what we're terming the Fire Safety Outage Management Program. I'm sure you're well informed and where we're at. So this is the first year in targeting those initial areas. You know, kudos to a lot of the folks who've worked, both Chad Bowman, Chad Rissman, communications, the outreach folks. A lot of work has been done to get to this point. The next one down is regard to a new vegetation management plan that has been worked on over the past couple of years as we've looked at a different standard that has been completed as well. On the next page, we shift into updates on substation plans. So we've looked at the next five-year plan and have completed that. Looking at this year, we have two substations, the Leavenworth Bavarian as well as the North Shore on Lake Chelan. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of work had gone into the Fire Safety Outage Management Program that has delayed some of that activity, but that's being resumed, as well as the civil design for both of those, although we do have equipment bids underway. And then the last one, which you've heard about, we energized the new Holly substation earlier this summer. And moving on to the next page, I have the next one as well, and that's in regard to the Dryden system, the new treatment plant. As Justin had described, funding's been secured, so that's a big relief for that project, given the cost that we have a path forward and a way to fund it.
This is Sean again. On our EV strategy, we've collected all the data and analyzed it and sent to our rate team for our rate
for public charging we'll bring to you at the end of the year. I've got the next one. So this is the long-term marketing strategies. We had discussions with the board about this in the spring, and that is now complete, and we are launched on implementing the long-term marketing strategies.
I've got the next couple. Sean here again. So under the same area of define and evaluate coordination strategy, we've had one party that said there are high barriers, and also BPA is not very interested. And we've decided to focus our efforts on the Canadian entitlement issue. Additionally, on the next one, so that won't be done this year, gain agreement with BPA on the next steps of coordination. Again, we've decided we're going to have issues and a focus on the Canadian entitlement issue. So we're putting coordination in a holding pattern.
This is Kirk again. I've got the next one. We had a goal to complete the phase two business case for the independent operations plan by the end of the second quarter. We've lost some key resources in the independent operations area. And so the team left has been trying to pick that up and carry it. They did get a draft done by the end of June, but that is still under review, so that's just lagging behind just a little bit.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Mullins, Director of Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics, and today I'm filling in for Kelly Boyd, our CFO and Chief Risk Officer. I have two items to report that we completed in Q2. The first item is 13C, establish a strategy for environmental, social, and governance reporting by Q2. The accounting and treasury areas partnered with communications and completed their strategy draft by Q2 in this evolving area. The strategy did include making some changes to our existing sustainability items in our annual report. And we are also actively pursuing in industry forums to monitor advancement in requirements as they develop. There aren't specific requirements for public power utilities such as us, but we are being proactive in monitoring this. We do expect this is going to be a competitive advantage for us because of existing practices that we already have that fall in this category, along with the consistency in our mission, vision, and values. The next item is receive a clean audit opinion with no material deficiencies by April 30th. I'm happy to report that we accomplished this goal by receiving our clean financial audit opinion with no material efficiencies or deficiencies on April 12, 2021.
I've got the next one, and consistent with our strategic plan, we implemented annual rate adjustments for electric, water, wastewater, and the fiber businesses on June 1, and that is now being billed.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer, Managing Director over Information Technology. This item deals with looking at our cybersecurity landscape and defining our needs to complete by the end of the year. And we've actually identified 19 initiatives, not all of them related to C2M2, and we'll present to the board at a later date.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety. On the red. Oh. All right, so the senior team safety visits, we are in the green. We hit 100% for the second quarter. And then also in the learning teams, we are also in the red. We've at three of the five learning teams.
In the green.
I'm sorry, in the green. All right, I am also going to talk about the next reel.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Lorna Klimansky, Managing Director of Human Resources. I'm now on the bottom of page 18 and item 5A. We were to get Managing Director guidance for Planning Leadership Development Program. And the start for that was delayed because we are prioritizing work on developing and providing access to curriculum for all jobs. We started work on creating content and migrating it because we had a willing group ready to go. So we've moved some things into our learning management system, LMS 365. But we are planning to start the managing director interviews this month. I think they actually have already started. 5B is similarly developing and implementing an implementation plan for leadership development. I've just noted caution on this because we were a little bit behind on the earlier item, but we expect this to get back on track by the end of the year. Then I have items 5C and 6A. They're related. They are both complete. 5C was the spring leadership team meeting, which has been completed. And at that meeting, we included a diversity training item. Then on items 6B, C, and D, a variance has been granted for those items. Those are related to working with other business units on developing diversity plans. And we've had some changes in staffing in the recruiting area, and so we're concentrating on moving all of our recruitments forward, and we're going to just be delaying these items into next year's performance plan.
Tracy? Maybe I'll take this one for Tracy. This is an item that is focused on the fact that we were going to have to do a lot of work on COVID this year, that we have senior team meetings at least weekly to talk about the policies. I regret to say we are continuing to have those meetings, and we probably are going to be doing it for the foreseeable future.
Commissioners, John Stoll again. We're now on number 7, encourage innovation, and we did not meet the target for having the project work plan put together. After board approval, it took quite some time back and forth with the contractor to get a notice to proceed. That being said, we are moving full speed ahead and engaging the contractor as well as starting the project in earnest.
This is Kirk again, the bottom of page 21. We had a goal to have the 2020 two goals identified for the advanced distribution management system by the end of the second quarter, and that was completed on June 18th. Mainly it's continuous improvement plus beginning the integration of outage management system next year.
Commissioners, this is Ian Fitzgerald again. This project, we're looking at developing a vegetation management system in conjunction with customer utilities. At this time, based on priorities and customer utilities, this project is currently blocked and waiting for those resources to free up. It does look like we'll get those resources later this summer, early this fall, and could still complete this project on time.
Commissioners, Bob Shane again. I have item 8, A, B, and C. I'll talk collectively. We're struggling a little bit. We're behind schedule, primarily due to some staffing issues within the vendor we're working with. They have recently reassigned a new project manager on that project, so we hope to maybe make up some time. We're not sure we'll hit our overall schedule for this year, but there's a elevated effort to get this back on track.
Commissioner Dean Fitzgerald again. I have the next few. The first one is dealing with new policies based on our team's rollout. My transition in and a supervisor transition out in retirement delayed this a little bit, but it was reassigned and prioritized, and it was completed in this last quarter. Going back to Microsoft Teams Phase 2, we missed the deadline at 6:30, but we actually just put the product into beta testing 2 weeks ago with a group, and we will have this rolled out by the end of August to the entire company. And then lastly, we actually moved up the priority of a Microsoft Exchange upgrade from the end of the year up until this last quarter to correspond with the Microsoft Team rollout. It was an enabling requirement. That project has now been completed.
So I'll wrap this up just by saying at this point, halfway through the year, we think we're a little above three quarters of our goals that are completed or on track. That's more in line with what we've seen in years that were not COVID years. We certainly had some challenges last year, but we're back more in the range of what we would expect, even though we are continuing to manage through COVID issues. That's it for our report. Happy to take any questions or comments from the board.
Commissioners, any questions, comments?
This is Steve McKenna. Bob, I just had a question. The portal replacement, could you remind me what that involves, what that actually is?
Certainly. So thank you for the opportunity to elaborate. So we currently have a portal that we operate and maintain ourselves. We basically, the district built that some 18 years ago, and we've been using it successfully. Although that model is slowly out, it's not keeping up with the newer types of technologies in terms of the portal itself, but also the application itself. So we reached out to ETI to develop a more of a standardized telecom-based platform, which is more in line with what the industry is doing now. So they're developing that application for us. We've been working on this for some time. We're making good progress, but we've had a recent stall with the current project manager and not meeting our overall timing expectations, but we continue to work with that group. We still think it's a solid project or a solid product, and we're looking forward to having that released probably in worst case would be Q1 of next year to have that go live. And that would replace our current home-built portal that we use in the fiber group.
And Bob, would you just add that what the portal will do for the customer, for the retail customer, please?
Yes. So the portal is the data platform that basically manages everything about the connection to our fiber customers, the technical connectivity, the billing information, the address information, the types of services that are applied to that customer. And it's also used in troubleshooting. And the newer system will have some very advanced features should we decide to implement those, where we can, when we decide, we can have the providers actually provision directly into the portal for their customers. So we're looking at the various options under that platform that we'll use to maximize the benefit for us as a district and our customer owners. So it's a true platform built on telecom industry standards, something that wasn't really around when we started the fiber program 20 years ago. So it's truly an advancement in how we manage our customers, their service connections, and our billing.
Thank you, Bob. Commissioners, additional questions, comments?
Yes, Randy, this is Ann. Just a big thank you. This is a great update. And, you know, I need it. We probably all do. So greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Any other comments from commissioners? Because, you know, one thing that passed through my mind as I was listening to all of the presentations, and we've had the last couple of years a challenge, well, especially with COVID, of not getting project completed. And it seemed like today in the presentation, there were a whole lot more announcements of, we got this done, we got this done, we got this done a couple of weeks late. That sounded good. To me, it said we're making some good progress. So I want to thank the entire senior team for your diligence in sticking to your plans. It pays off in the long run. So thank you.
Thank you for those comments.
We're done with our morning agenda. Just move. It's now 11:05. Let's just move right into our afternoon agenda, if that meets with everybody's approval.
That works for me.
Hearing no objections, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Mr. President, well, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to...
Go ahead,
Dennis.
Nope, keep going. A becomes before B.
I move that we could approve the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We're at regular agenda resolution number 9. Steve.
This is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement with the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority relating to redevelopment planning and marketing of the 5th Street PUD campus property. Dan Frazier is here and will present. We did go over this the last time, and we made some changes in response to the commission comments. Dan will describe those for you.
Thank you, Steve. Dan Frazier. Oops, let me get the mic closer. Thank you. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. A little out of breath, just ran up here. got ahead. Good. As Steve indicated, we had a couple changes from the resolution as it was, or to the agreement. That's the subject of this resolution from the presentation last week. The substantive change is to include to amend the structure of the compensation to include three tiers of compensation, starting with a 2% for sales that are 75% or less than the appraised value, and then a second tier of 3% for 75% to 110% of the appraised value, and then the third tier would be over 110% of the appraised value. So only change to the document. We did change the wording a little bit just so it was very clear how that was working and which transactions will be subject to that to those amounts. So other than that, if there's any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
You bet.
Could just add, the board, the Chelan County Board of Commissioners did adopt this at their meeting last Tuesday with the changes.
Okay. The Port Authority?
Yes. Well, the combined Port Authority, sorry.
Right. Okay. Very good. Any other questions from commissioners for Dan? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to approve resolution number 9?
I'll move to approve resolution number 9.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to approve resolution number 9. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you, commissioners.
You bet. You bet. Are there manager items?
We do have a number, actually. We want to start with an update on the connection plan or outreach plan for working with the electric system development charge. Actually, it will also apply to the water and wastewater charges as well. Jenna Rahm is here. This is in response to a board request at the last board meeting.
Hi, good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect. So in response to your request at the last meeting, we got together and worked on an outreach plan for this specific topic. As you know, during the strategic planning process, we were directed by, you know, our customers that they had a preference for keeping their rates low, but still wanted to encourage economic development in the county. And so we have been exploring ways to create a system where growth sort of helps pay for that growth. So staff were directed to evaluate those options, and one of those options that was brought forward at the last meeting were these system development fees or charges. And so this is a outreach plan to sort of work on how we would explain this sort of complex topic to the public and get their feedback on how they feel about this approach to recovering some of those costs. So the final decision maker on this is going to be the Board of Commissioners, but we do want to make sure that the public has an opportunity to provide some feedback and some input on how we construct this fee and this cost recovery, you know, approach. So the main components of our outreach plan include, we really want to put a lot of effort up front into creating a lot of materials that really help dig into and explain this topic. It is really complex. There's a lot of, I think, like educational component into understanding why a fee like this would be assessed or what some of the other options are that maybe if we didn't go that route, why we may not have gone that route. And so we really want to work on making a video explainer that sort of goes into details about how this works, similar to how we made a lot of videos during the strategic planning process. It's a really helpful tool to help explain things like rates and fees. We also want to do another online open house. We've found with some of our past projects where we've used these that it's a really good place to really fine-tune all of your messaging and your key information points and fact sheets and things like that into one location where people can kind of go through the content at their own leisure. And then we want to take all of these materials that we create and preview them with that strategic plan topic team that worked on this issue during our strategic planning process. Since that was the group that sort of directed us in this direction, we want to make sure that we bring this back to them first and say, hey, does this capture, you know, the feedback that we got from you? Does this look reflective of the discussion we had earlier? And are there any things in here that don't make sense that we need to fine tune a little bit more or do a better job of explaining? Then we take that feedback, incorporate it into all of these materials and things, and then we move forward with more public outreach at that point, holding several different drop-in sessions in different areas of the county. You know, hopefully COVID will allow that. And also remotely on Zoom, we're finding that now that people have gotten, you know, adjusted to using Zoom, that some people prefer that remote platform for engagement with us. And then we go through the same concepts with them in those venues and get their feedback and get a feel for how the public is feeling about this approach as well. Throughout this entire process, we would also schedule in regular updates with you, with the board, to let you know what we're hearing and what we've got up next to present to and sort of work through that process as we go. Our hope is to have all of this concluded by the end of the year. Oh, and here's kind of a high-level schedule of how each of those things that I just listed would be implemented, I guess, in time. The ones that are yellow are sort of the more public presentations, and then the green are our board presentation. Do you have any questions?
Commissioners, any questions for Jenna?
I just appreciate the public process, and it looks like a very thorough process, Jenna, so thank you.
Gary.
Thank you. And I have a question, and that really revolves around I like the video explainer. I think that's great. And I think that's I'm a very visual person, so that helps a great deal in terms of understanding the concept in a short period of time. Have we ever given any thought as an organization, especially on a topic like this that is so large, that we would utilize the local television to run commercials, or at least invitations to the meetings when we open them up to the public, in order to really cast our net wide, get the information out there, give people an opportunity to really zero in on the attendance?
Yeah, I would have to defer probably to Neil or communications on whether that's been done in the past. I know that they do use commercials publicly for certain topics at the PUD, but we can certainly circle back with communications and work on a plan for advertising all of this outreach as well.
I only say that by way of letting you know that when I attended a meeting down in Malaga, there was some feedback from folks, even the folks that were there, saying that they had been unaware that this meeting was being held until the last minute. So this is a big enough topic that in terms of casting our net wide and far, forms of media should be considered. So just a thought. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Jenna? Nope. We look forward to hearing the periodic updates as to where it's going and what the feedback is. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, next up, commissioners, we have what we affectionately call our critter update from John Soule.
Good morning, commissioners. John Soule again, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I know we've shared some information, and we've heard from you, too, that we are experiencing a higher level of squirrel or critter outages than historically. That's creating some issues with our system. The good news is our system is very well designed and protected, so when we have a squirrel that gets into a transformer or trips something out and creates a fault, you may have heard of a reclosure device that will actually protect the system. It will pause when it senses that fault, and then it'll re-engage. And if it's cleared, most people come back in power. But that creates some customer issues where, you know, it happens at my house where I'll be online and power goes out for 3 seconds, and, you know, it creates a disturbance. So engineering is doing a hard look at that, because we hear that, and looking for ways that we can, one, maybe put more protection in our system, more animal guarding actually on the equipment like transformers and just deterrence for the squirrels primarily. But they're pretty creative, so that's not the only thing we can do. I looked up a stat, and believe it or not, there's estimated to be 1.2 billion squirrels in the United States, so we're not alone, but there's things we can do. One thing we do, we can isolate our system a bit more. So instead of an entire feeder, which may have, you know, 500 to 1,000 customers on it, sensing that bump, we may do something where we'll look at fusing. So a lateral or a smaller piece of the system would actually go out of service for a bit. We could then go replace the fuse or whatever we needed to do and not impact that entire feeder. So it's a bit of a trade-off. But we're trying to understand where those opportunities are as well. But I just wanted to let you know that we're working on it and looking for opportunities to reduce those customer impacts.
So, John, not to be depressing at all, but I just want you to be aware that squirrel habitat in Chelan County appears to be expanding, not shrinking.
Yes.
And they've become a nuisance invasive species in the orchard industry, burrowing under irrigation canals is one, and they appear to love cherries, and that does not set well with a cherry grower. So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Thanks, Commissioner. They also like to chew on fiber as well.
Any other comments for John?
John, I just want to take that a step further and make sure the board understands that trade-off would be potentially people being out of power for a longer period of time, but a smaller group.
Correct.
Folks getting that 3 or 4 seconds. So that's probably something that the board ultimately may have some interest in, too, in terms of that trade-off. Okay, with that, I want to move next to Justin Erickson and an update on the Riverfront Park feedback.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director, District Services. We had quite a turnout on July 20th at the first public event associated with the Riverfront Park planning efforts. So I just wanted to give you a quick update of that endeavor and talk about some of the comments that we've seen so far, some of the consistent themes that we're seeing, and then mention where we're headed from here. So thank you, Rebecca, for bringing up that photo. That's actually a photo from the morning session of the open house. So you can see people came in groups. We had an interesting opportunity with this open house to capture people that were actively using the trail and inform them about the event, and then hopefully encourage them to stop over at the event center and engage with our staff and our consultant team. And so it was really great. We had about 135 attendees in total. We had a morning, afternoon, and evening session. The morning was the most widely attended, which was also interesting. And some of these things may not surprise us too much, but it's a few characteristics of those that attended. People really love this park. It means a lot to them. It's a defining part of the community, and it's a gathering space that, that many people use quite frequently. Those that attended the event or submitted online comments, 52% used the park at least once or twice a week. So very high use. And it's also a place to take visitors and a place to really define the community for people that are visiting as well. So when we engage with people about what some potential changes that they'd like to see in this area, there were a few things that kind of rose to the top. That included more areas for kids, whether that's a play structure or a fountain or water feature or a combination thereof. More year-round activity and better support or facilitation of vendors and restaurants and things that allow people to use the area even differently than they're able to today, particularly when it comes to outdoor dining. Got quite a few comments about the mortgage facility and boating infrastructure. And just engagement with the river in general, whether that's better views or an opportunity to actually dip your feet in the river or have a small swim beach, things that are that are harder to do in this portion of the park versus, say, in Walla Walla. Lots of interest in more gathering spaces, whether that's a place to picnic or a place to hold a birthday party or a place for a small or medium-sized event. And then quite a bit of discussion about enhancing some of the landscaping that's there, or new landscape areas, as well as public art and the improving and enhancing the art through landscaping as well. What was also interesting is, for much of the public, they don't necessarily see the distinction between this park and Walla Walla or the city's facilities to the south. It sort of all blends in. And so we had people there that provided a lot of comments about other parks and other facilities to the city, to parks that we manage, to parks in East Wenatchee. So just lots of discussion and a strong contingency of pickleball players that came out and really wanted to talk about pickleball and ways to enhance that in the community. Not necessarily in this part of the park. I think they recognize that that would be a challenge for this particular park, but we talked a lot about existing tennis courts that could be converted or better facilitate pickleball. And our parks manager, Ryan Baker, actually went out the next week and played with a group of pickleball players that meets over in East Wenatchee. So I think he got his butt kicked on the game, but so where are we headed from here on this effort? So we recognize that not everybody could attend the open house in person, so we wanted to have a similar experience online. So that's available on our website. And we've already had 93 people submit comments through the online survey. That's open until August 10th. So we'll be doing some additional promotion on that via our website and via a radio interview tomorrow. This will lead towards more detailed enhancement plans and evaluation of alternatives. And we'll have a second public open house in probably in mid to late September. So certainly I'll update the board on that when we have a specific date scheduled. And ultimately, we'll have a draft plan in place and a presentation to a more formal presentation to the board, as well as the Wenatchee City Council. And I anticipate that would probably happen in November or thereabouts. And through all of those efforts, of course, there'll be additional opportunities for public comment and review of the materials. Any questions at this time?
Commissioners, any questions? Good update, Justin. We know that people love our parks, and there's a lot of pickleball players in the world. I know that.
Thank you.
I'd like to just make a comment too, Justin. Great job. It sounds to me like you were highly successful in reaching the public and having the public interact. That's great. We take our marching orders from those customer owners, and so I'm very excited to hear that your meetings and your public outreach went so well. So thank you.
Thanks for the support, commissioners.
Commissioners, I would like to encourage, if you have not already done so, and we will send you a link to the survey. I thought the survey was really well done, and it'll be important for you because it tees up the issues in a certain way for you to be thinking about how those were displayed to the public. Very easy. You can spend 5 minutes and take a look at the survey. So we'll get that link to you. Next up, Chad Rissman and Eric Walquist will give you an update on the Holly Street substation.
Yeah, good morning, commissioners. Eric Walquist, general counsel here, and Chad's joining us. There he is. Rebecca, Hello. Would you mind you pulling up the presentation? We can hear you, Chad.
Great.
1 second. Thanks. Thanks, Rebecca. Had to get the good picture up there. So, commissioners, thanks for giving us just a few minutes this morning to talk about what's happening with Holly Street Substation and where we're headed from here. I'm sure you know we gave you the update last week, our last board meeting. It was energized and actually serving load, but it did take quite a bit to get us here. Talk just a bit about where we're at now and where we're going to be headed here in terms of the commitments that were made to Stamilt and the properties that they owned there. I know that we have talked about this previously as part of the agreement with Stamilt and the partnering with them to build this substation, but it's been a while, and we thought we'd circle back. So I'm going to turn the first couple slides over to Chad, and then I'll take the last slide. And any questions, we can tag team. Go ahead, Chad.
Good morning, Commissioner Chad Rissman, Director of Distribution and Asset Management and Engineering. What a fun and challenging, fun but challenging project. As Eric mentioned, happy to hear that we've energized and are now serving the Diamond Foundry load so they can expand in their plant to their plans. So
So just a little bit of a reminder here, the station need, we had about 7 megawatts of capacity that we could provide them. They were asking much more than that, 19 megawatts, and the capability to expand beyond that 19 megawatts. So recognize that the additional substation capacity was required in order to serve them. Additionally, they were looking for specific reliability requirements, so they were wanting redundancy at the substation level. When we perform maintenance on the substation major components, they could be out for several weeks or months, depending on what might be found as we're going through that routine maintenance. So during that time, that doesn't work very well for them to be out of service, so there's some redundancy in the substation. I mentioned just a little bit about the 7 megawatts temporary, so that will be freed up now to serve our customers. It wasn't being used before, but it's reserved there for customer growth in the North Wenatchee area, which we know is going to be efforts now to change around the properties, the adjacent properties with the DOT building being removed. So we're expecting anticipating growth in the area. So the mill leased the buildings to the Diamond Foundry is where the Diamond Foundry is built. So next slide. Just a little, a couple of bullets on the construction timeline. We started discussing this concept in 2018. What was unique about it, made it fun and challenging, is that this was a substation that was built and funded by the customer. And built to district standards, so a lot of coordination and collaboration to ensure that once it was stood up and commissioned, that it would meet the district's expectations, be able to maintain and operate long term. Some of the key milestones were in July, so just over a year ago, the transformers arrived, and then here back in this last February, the brain of the substation is the control building with the circuit breakers arrived. And so then that got tied in to the other components by the contractor. And in March, it was physically turned over to the district to begin performing assessments of consistency with standards, commissioning, testing, baselining all the equipment, parts, and processes. I just wanted to mention that we had a deadline the 1st of July to get the Diamond Foundry transferred over to the station. And normally, on the operations side, we are having to prioritize everything that's going on. And it's hard for us sometimes to stick to a schedule because we're being pulled off onto other priority things that come up and reacting to things that happen, specifically in our substation operations and with the tech shop. Hydros and other substations are pulling us away, but our operational staff, specifically our technicians and our wiremen, did an excellent job of making sure they understood exactly what that date was and the goal was, and putting everything in place that they could, including working lots of overtime to ensure that that date was met. So a special thanks to them. So July 8th was energized, and as of July 16th, we're serving load. Before July 8th there, we determined that it did meet the district standards, so a bill of sale and things were processed and signed, and physical transfer did occur from the customer over to the district. The substation costs, so this was a double bank station essentially, because 228 in order to provide that redundancy to the Diamond Foundry, the cost of the station was about $10 million. That included some transmission modifications and construction, and then also the distribution circuit. So partially comparable to our stations, and the costs are about in range. So, next slide. And hand this off to Eric to talk about some of the legal terms.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. So, commissioners, pursuant to the agreement that we had with Stemilt when we entered our partnership with them to build this substation. Once the substation was completed, constructed, inspected, and accepted, then the substation assets proper were to be transferred for the district by bill of sale. Chad's given you that date. That did occur. It's effective as of July 8th. So we are now the proud owners of the work that's been done out there. We also have commitments that are ongoing and survive that transfer under the original agreement with Stamil, particularly related to reservation of the capacity and some of the ancillary obligations associated with that. So just going to tick through some of the important legal provisions and what we can expect here as we move forward, and then happy to take any questions that you have. So you heard Chad mention that this was because of redundancy requests on the part of the customers, double banked at a 56 megawatt substation. 28 megawatts is usable pursuant to the agreement with Stamilt. It is reserved to Stamilt for allocation among the tenants that they have or themselves on the property that fit that original footprint. They have not used the full 28 at this point, and the district is able to use that power or capacity elsewhere, primarily so we don't have stranded assets out there as the need grows. But Stamilt is reserved the first right of use for that 28 megawatts. The original agreement that we had with Stamilt and that 28 megawatt capacity reservation to them extends for 35 years from the date of the approval and transfer by bill of sale. So we do have an ongoing commitment to Stamilt for quite a period of time until and unless that agreement is modified in any way. When Stamilt does bring on new tenants, then those tenants become customers of the district, even though they are tenants of Stamilt. And what we do require per the agreement is that the tenant reach out to the district, talk to us about their needs, submit any necessary application or paperwork. That allows the district to make an assessment of what capacity is available on the substation and whether or not the... Do you want to mute that?
Anything else?
Commissioner Congdon, there we go. Thanks. So I couldn't tell if she was trying to ask a question there. So the district would receive whatever application. We make determination about the capacity available on the substation, whether it was still within the available 28 megawatts reserved or whether there needed to be some other arrangement. The district would have the opportunity to enter into a service agreement, a power agreement with the tenant of Stamilt, and those arrangements are primarily for the payment of the power and other services received there by the tenants, and they either take pursuant to our standard rate schedule or, like the Diamond Foundry, would have a specific agreement at the district's discretion. So Chad mentioned the $10 million approximately of capital costs up front to be allocated to Stamilt. Stamilt has accepted that and paid that amount of money. Actually, some of the ongoing work that we're doing, Chad's group is doing, is trying to audit and fully account for those costs that we might actually be responsible for relative to the construction of the substation. So while the substation capital proper and the necessary costs associated with putting that substation into service were borne by Stamilt, there was an opportunity through the agreement as we discovered things out there that district might want on the substation that were, I'm going to say, extra credit, not necessarily necessary to the energization of the substation, but stuff that helped us feel good about the substation, necessary for reliability purposes, and our planned use of that Holly Street site into the future. There is some outstanding requests that we had made of Stamilt. They have made those improvements at our request, and we are now wrapping up, pursuant to the terms of the original construction agreement, the allocation of those final costs related to the district's request for optional work. One of those, for illustrative purposes, commissioners, there was a pipe underneath the site where the substation was built and required relocation of that pipe so that the substation could be built there. Through that process, we discovered that pipe actually went under one of the buildings out there on the site. And so while relocation of the pipe under the building wasn't necessary strictly to the construction and operation of the substation, it sure made things a lot easier for us to do it with one contractor on site with the equipment to move that. So we asked Stamilt to do that. They have completed that work, and that's one of those costs that we would be responsible for under the original agreement. So what happens now with the substation coming to district ownership? I've talked a little bit about how we'll manage customers into the future and our reserved capacity for us to melt. But the district does own it, and we do carry that ordinary operation and maintenance cost obligation associated with the substation, which we will operate as part of our ordinary fleet. But you'll recall from original discussions about entering this agreement that there was a goal of trying to keep this project cost neutral to our existing customers, particularly given the reserved capacity back to Stamilt. So while we do have that ordinary operations and maintenance costs going forward, we are trying to recover those costs under the agreements with the tenants for the delivery of power. We have that in our present agreement with the Diamond Foundry, and to the extent that the full capacity is not utilized, there is a provision in the original agreement for construction of the substation with Stamilt such that if the full allocation of 28 megawatts was not fully utilized, then Stamilt would be responsible for the gap O&M charges between the utilized capacity and the full capacity of the substation. There are some nuances to that in terms of how it's calculated and how much, but there is some ongoing responsibility on Stamilt's part there. So we will continue to manage the load there and work with the Diamond Foundry and Stamilt to put the 28 megawatts to full use and benefit here in the area, and give you updates as necessary as we go along. But that's what we have today. If you have any questions, happy to answer them or have Chad help us.
Commissioners, any questions for Eric or Chad?
Randy, this is Steve. I just have
I was just going to say, I understand the cutover went well.
That sounds like a Chad question.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that the Diamond Foundry and us were concerned about that we didn't recognize at the beginning of the project was that they were going to be built out with their machines to a pretty good extent, and recognizing through the course of them operating that there was a pretty big expense if they were even to have a short outage, they have to restart their process. It makes me think of Alcoa. Not sure exactly how their processes work, but that was very costly to them, and that became a pretty big issue. And so we were able to work through and build some temporary feeds and double feeding them, and worked together with them. They paid for some additional costs in order for us to change around some of our lines. But essentially what that allowed us to do was be able to perform the transfer over to the new station without an outage. And so, yeah, it was uneventful, which is exactly what we want.
Thank you.
Commissioner McKenna, did you have a question?
No, actually, it was the same comment. Commissioner Arsenal and I were walking through the yard on a tour with something else the other day, and it just struck me I'm not an engineer. I don't fully understand the ins and outs of what happens there, but to see that thing energized and transferred and yet at the same time have all of those facilities working and continue operation, it just kind of boggled my mind to be standing right next to that, listening to it, looking at it. It was very impressive to think that our staff pulled that off without a hitch, and it was impressive. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Commissioners, if there aren't any other questions, I'd just like to take a second and say thanks to the folks at Stamilt and our folks. We had never done this kind of a partnering on construction of a substation previously, and to have it have gone as well as it did is actually remarkable. A lot of meetings. I attended some. Lawyers, they don't invite very often, but I want to say thanks to Peter Spadoni as well at Jeffers, Danielson, Son and Elward, very helpful in facilitating the original agreement, the transfer of the assets, and any issues that have come up. I think that between the good folks at Stemilt and Chad's team and Peter and I, we were able to pick up the phone or sit in a room together and get it resolved as quickly as possible. So it was not without those collective efforts that this went so well. So I appreciate them and just want to make sure that they know that.
If I could add one other comment, I think this agreement represents a really important precedent that's being established here, too. So this is the, once the contract is fully engaged and the Diamond Foundry has built out under the existing contract, this will be the largest load in Chelan County, basically by a factor of five. So we have been looking at economic development opportunities, which focuses on these larger loads. And what this does is establish the precedent that the entity that's coming in and wants a load of that size will pay the upfront capital costs, and therefore that existing customers will not be exposed to stranded cost risk associated with the capital cost. So we have others that potentially have a similar kind of interest. Having established this precedent puts us in a good place to be able to say to our other customers, to our existing customers, that the strategic plan goal that we would be able to do economic development at little to no cost to existing ratepayers can be met.
That's all
good
we
update.
Have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chad.
That's all we had in terms of manager items tonight.
Okay, Commissioner Travel.
Lisa is here.
Hello, Commissioners. We don't have
one sec, please. Gonna unmute it. Now try again. There you go.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, Rebecca just unmuted you.
Is it that?
Oh.
Not hearing.
Doing Hello. A techno challenge here.
I'm challenged today. Sorry about that. So we have a I think we got anxious to travel and not sure really that there will be much of that, but we have Commissioners Arsenault and Congdon attending the NWPPA annual conference. And I asked them today if they'll be doing any of that virtually, because right now it's in person. I haven't heard back yet. I'll let you know if they change that. Commissioner Congdon, do you want to be registered if it's not virtual? Is she here today?
She is. She might be muted.
Okay.
Ann, are you on mute?
I can follow up later. It's okay. We also have coming up for Waputa in September, association meetings in Ellensburg, water committee meeting in September in Leavenworth. Commissioner Congdon will attend virtually. And then into October, Waputa meetings as well, budget meeting. So we don't have a lot going on right now, but I'm happy to make note of anything you want to be registered for.
Lisa, this is Dennis. The Waputa September meetings, are those a combination of in-person and virtual?
I haven't heard yet.
Okay. If it's virtual, please register me.
Okay.
I would say the same as Dennis. If it's virtual, I'm interested in the association meetings.
Okay.
My understanding is that the Waputa meetings will will continue to offer a hybrid through the remainder of the year. That's my understanding. Yeah.
Okay.
And Lisa, also just in terms of the association meetings for NWPPA, et cetera, we'll keep a close watch on what's developing with the new Delta COVID variant to see whether that changes things. And so I'll be in touch with you on that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else I can help you with?
Commissioners, it sounds like we're still minimizing our travel. That's just sort of a reality.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, we have a follow-up on delegation of action items from the previous board meeting.
We just had one, and it was to provide an outreach plan for the system development charges. So you received that earlier in this meeting.
Okay. Any delegation of action from this meeting?
I know we had one, and that was to get you the link on the Riverfront Park survey, and Justin has already done that. So you should find that in your email. And then we had a second one that Andrew Grissel will follow up with Alan Walker on further partnership opportunities with the Community Action Council.
Okay. Is there any additional public comment to come before the commission? Are there any other matters to come before the commission? We are in need of an executive session, but looking at the clock, I'm going to suggest that we recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock for that executive session. And because we'll be probably asking for an hour for that executive session. So Rebecca, the process for doing that, will we come back in, call the meeting to order at 1 o'clock, and then go into executive session?
I think if you'd like to read the reason now, we can recess and then come back straight into executive session.
That's correct. You just need to indicate that we would come in at 1.
Okay. Well, that being said, we have need of an executive session for approximately an hour to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by the RCWs. At this moment in time, we will recess and we will reconvene at 1 o'clock in executive session.
Thank you.
It is 1:27 p.m. on August 2, 2021. This is the Chelan Public Utility District Board of Commissioners coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the board? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.
All right.